beings, earthlings, and humans, and any animals who, you know, of the animal kingdom. Everybody tells me when their animals hear my voice, they stop and they're transfixed because, you know, the melodious tones and all that. Animals are, you know, able to, like, really be able to feel some high intelligence kind of thing. So high animals, humans, and earthlings, and all of you. I'm very excited for my show today at the Roseanne Barr podcast. I've got to get the name in there. Jake will get mad at me.
So you see, my patience is growing.
Welcome to the Roseanne Barr podcast, and it's going to be another banger because we have such a great guest to talk to. Ladies and gentlemen, the king of late night television himself, Greg Gutfeld. Hi, yay!
Stop, everybody. Sit down. Sit down.
Jeez, people.
Yeah, the bus boy over there. Yes. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited.
I'm more excited than you are.
I'm so excited.
I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. I mean, I'm not trying to be a fanboy or everything, but come on, you're Roseanne Barr.
Oh, you're
probably
sweet.
the most successful female comedian in 50 years, maybe longer.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably like stand-up.
Stand-up, yep.
But I don't really know because Amy Schumer, she says she is because she's done the movies. So she did like movies, so she says she's the most successful female stand-up. But I'm like, yeah, but we mean funny.
Yes. I know Amy. I like Amy. I'm going to pull that out. What was that line? Like, they said about John F. Kennedy to Dan Quayle. Was it Al Gore? Like,
what?
I like Amy Schumer. You're great, but you're no John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, no
she's
John.
No Roseanne Barr, but yeah. Nobody is. Nobody is.
Oh, you're so sweet. You know, when I'm really drunk, I really will agree with you there. When I'm really drunk and I start going off to my son, these people, but, you know, try not to go there to the edge, you know, because you said you quit drinking.
Yes, yes. I stopped. It was the only drug I hadn't tried was sobriety. I had done everything, and it was getting harder and harder to get anything out of it. And I'm going, like, what about this thing where you don't do anything? And then it was amazing. It is, I'm literally, and I hate to say this because it sounds like a hippie thing, but I'm high, like when I get up in the morning, because I've never had mornings before. Like I get up and I'm like, it's 7.
I feel good.
I feel good. What is this thing? There used to be all these problems I had. Like I was like, usually I'd be depressed or anxious and all that stuff. You know, it might still pop up here and there, but it's amazing. A lot of that moodiness and weirdness and ambivalence kind of like drifted away, and I'm actually interested in things. I didn't quit drinking because I thought, like, what would I do with all that time? And it turns out you can do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You can do a lot of – you can do, like, weird things like go for walks. I would never go for a walk. I thought that walking was for losers. Like, what are you going to walk to? Are you going for a walk? How stupid is that? And now I
because you'd rather be sitting there drinking and chatting, but it's about chatting, isn't it?
You know what it is? It's like the drinking was about being with your thoughts.
Yeah.
And work and hypothesizing, like it's almost like beta testing the future.
It
like,
is that.
You know,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I love doing that. But at the same time, it's like I was also just avoiding things. And as I got more and older, I was just becoming more antisocial. Like I was no longer drinking with other people. I would avoid. I was like, I'm not going to go to a bar. I have to wait for a waiter. I have to wait for a bartender. There are other people there. I just, you know, just go home, get a bottle of wine. So it just became more isolational. And I decided, you know what? It's time. It's time. 2024 is coming up. I got to be ready.
Yeah, you got to fight. There's a big fight.
Yeah.
But were you – so did you get sober or did you just quit drinking?
I got sober. I mean, I didn't go to any rehab. I just a click went off in my head and I just been thinking about it. I've been thinking about it for a while, but I always put it off. And then for some reason, I just decided, that's it. And that was it. And then I've been like, you know, I
do think it's because also you got so busy. I mean, you're doing this show and you can't feel bad. You have to be able to produce, you know, the work. And
exactly.
Feel good.
Exactly. And you have to kind of be able to not put all your shit on other people. And when you're drinking, you do.
That's true.
And it's just like, you know, if you're not feeling well, then no one else is either. And right. I just had to, like, you know, maybe if I just tried this other drug, what would happen? And then all of a sudden it's like things are pretty good. But it was always the fear of what the rest of your life is like if you quit. Well, you can always start back.
That's what I tell myself.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I could quit smoking. I swear to God, because I'm like, you can stop a while and then start again if you really want
to. Yeah, you just don't. You know, the line is, you don't drink for today. I don't drink today. You know, who knows what'll happen tomorrow? And then tomorrow I'll say, well, I don't drink then. And then all of a sudden you start racking up the days.
Yeah.
You know, and pretty soon you got months and then years. I'm not at years yet, but you know. We'll see.
How long are you at?
It seems like you're liking it and feeling good.
I'm into my eighth month.
That's good.
Yeah. So it's good. Things are going well. I am busy.
What's it like to, like, I mean, because we were talking before. I mean, it's such a cultural shift and nobody's talking about it because they don't want to talk about anything real or anything that they don't want to define what's really happening. What? But it's a huge cultural shift that a conservative comedy show, and it is really well written and really funny. And I like that comics can say things on there and they don't have to act like goons.
Yes.
You know, they aren't dancing with hypodermic needles and shit like that. But, you know, you're saying something and it's a cultural shift because it's more to the conservative side. And these guys, I mean, they're just drowning in unfunny.
And they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
They're scared. I do think it all came down to speech because think about the shift, the fact that, like, you're no longer in this camp and the show is successful and they all have something in common. It's the freedom to say what you want. And once the left and liberals gave that up, we snatched it.
Yeah, we did.
We snatched it and we ran with it. That's and right. You can tell how, like, uncomfortable comedians of the left are when they know that there's a line they can't cross. Meanwhile, you and I, we can say whatever we want and we share the risk. You get in trouble.
Yeah, we do.
You get in trouble. I will defend you. If I get in trouble, I hope you, I know you will. But I mean, you know what I mean? It's like we understand that we're here to say what we think. And if that goes away, what's there? What's left to do?
Then we'll be unfunny.
Yeah.
You know what? It is like that we have the right to punch up and they don't.
Yeah.
They got to the ceiling. It's kind of like a glass ceiling or some other kind of ceiling. Where they cannot punch up because they're too scared, but then they have to punch down.
Yeah.
And it's never funny to punch down. But I mean, sometimes it is.
They accuse
us. If you're fat or drunk or something.
They accuse us of punching down when we go after any kind of identity group, which I believe is punching up.
I do too.
Because anybody that professes that they have a higher, I don't know, they have rights because they're victims.
Well, that they have the high moral ground when they don't.
Yes. And so, like, you know, they go, how dare you? You know, I do a lot of stuff on trans. And they go, you're punching down. I go, no, I'm not. They have more rights now, according to the left.
That's right.
You know what I mean? If a man can play, can, you know, go swimming against women in college sports, I think he has more rights.
Well, man against girls.
Exactly.
And it's like, so to me, it's like, such a continuation of the worst of patriarchy that you can come to.
Do you know,
but they don't even see it because they're so brainwashed because the left really thinks it controls thought and language.
Mm-hmm.
And so all they do is vomit up meaningless bullshit that nobody thinks is funny.
Do you know who's the worst at this are women? And you know Michael Malice. You know Michael Malice, right?
Love.
He came up with this great acronym called AWFLs.
Awful.
Yes, affluent white female liberals. Women are so quick to throw other women under the bus.
Oh, they can't wait.
That's
what happened to me.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, oh my God, they're always clutching their pearls, even though they probably think pearls are like patriarchal.
Yeah.
And then they will actually indulge a man who has gynophilia. You know,
he
gets off on dress. They will say that that person has more rights than the women.
That's
right. They're like, and it's like, it's like, where are the female teachers?
Peepers. These guys are peepers.
Yes,
remember that? A lot of them are fucking peepers. That's what we used to call them.
Peeping Toms.
Yeah. And
remember that?
When they're saying, come on in.
Yeah.
Peep this here.
Yeah.
You know,
not a peeping
and then they're like, you're not having a peeper. You transphobe. And I'm like, you know what? It's just like, okay, once we got COVID, you remember how there was no flu anymore?
Right.
Well, now there's no more transvestites.
That's
Did
true.
You notice, and there's no more peepers.
Remember
there's
this.
No more exhibitionists. There's only
no more perverts.
That.
The nudists must feel like there's cultural appropriation going on. Think about that. Yeah, I remember growing up in the 70s. They were always called transvestites or crossdressers. It got like, what? Corporal Klinger. Remember
right?
Corporal Klinger from MASH?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like now he's like, he should be mad. Jamie Farr should be upset that now that.
I think he's flattered.
Yeah.
He thinks that he's really started something.
Yes, yes. The 70s had it down with that stuff. Like Barney Miller had like had great. Like,
that was a great show.
Yeah. They had like a great gay character. They had always had. But now it's like everything is so serious and solemn and like, you know.
And not funny.
And not
They've
funny.
They've got a whole law against whatever. That's how I felt when I went back to come back, you know. Hmm. It was like the war against funny. The
yeah.
gauntlet against funny. That can't be funny. You know, it's a gauntlet.
Yeah.
And, of course, I fought, and when we got laughs and feel vanquished and vindicated, but now it's like it needs to be this
yes.
in lieu of a real belly laugh. They hate it.
It's like when you now watch the like okay in the mid to late 70s, watching the Oscars was like a group thing. It was fun. Mm-hmm. Now you watch it and you can just feel the stress of the people talking. Like they're like everybody has to be careful, and all the nominees have to be a specific kind of thing, and everybody is so careful. It's like there is no joy. That to me
There's
is the
no
pinnacle
joy.
Of yeah. The joy is gone.
The joy of comedy. The joy of creating something. The joy of when you got a good idea and everybody's in on it, like doing a show.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the Mickey Rooney old thing of let's put on a show. They just killed that.
Yeah.
They just murdered it in its crib.
Yes.
They're just horrible.
Yes.
Friggin',
yes.
Oh, they're horrible, you
yeah.
know?
And they hate it when they see success on the other side. They have to like, oh, there are things, oh, that's not funny. That's not funny. Oh, you know, it was always conservatives can't be funny. But now they won't even talk about it.
No.
You know, Adam Carolla told me that it's so personal over there on the other side that they have to pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Like yeah. they've got horse blinders on.
Yes.
They can't see. And of course, they've totally written me out of the entire yeah. social.
Yes.
You know, it's pretty amazing when they. I did three guest spots on the show The Office, you know.
Oh yeah.
And somebody just told me they wrote a book about all the people that guested on how great they were as guest stars. I'm not even mentioned. And
disgusting.
I was on three times. It's like she never existed, which was how it was when I first came.
Yeah.
It's like that woman, why is she not serving us coffee and she's criticizing our scripts? You know, it was that kind of like so arrogant leadership.
And you know who made that decision. Well, okay, it was a combination of like some young person, like a Gen Zer, somebody who can't write and can't tell jokes, but, you know, makes themselves important by making these decisions. Like, yeah. You know what? I think a lot of people... You know, a lot of people might be uncomfortable.
That's exactly
having,
what they say.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe it wouldn't hurt to, you know, I just want, no, you know what the word is? I just want people to feel safe. Everybody now has to feel safe. And it's like they've ruined the phrase safe.
Yeah.
Remember when it was, when art was supposed to be unsafe?
Yeah, it's supposed to make you think and
yeah,
feel and react.
Like, I remember, like, you know, artists would do terrible things. Terrible things.
Terrible.
Now they're like, they have to like make sure there's a play in England right now that has a trigger warning against eating oranges. Did you know this? Because the
No.
people on stage are eating oranges. It's a play about like transphobia. It's a queer play, but they're worried because the characters are eating oranges that it might be, might cause some kind of like PTSD.
What's the trigger of eating oranges?
The oranges?
It's called misophonia, which is like you have a a fear of hearing certain sounds.
Oh yeah, that's like married women with their husbands. I've heard about it. Like, no, it's a true thing. Like, you want to hit your husband in the head when you hear him chew. Is it that?
Maybe, but I think that they've probably made it that's into a real something thing. Worth. I mean, I don't like it when people
no,
chew,
it makes you want
to
hit them.
But like, that's like if you're going to a play and you can't handle that.
Yeah.
You can't handle watching someone eat an orange. It's yeah. just too far.
That's what
that
it is.
That makes me applaud for the possibility of the hydrogen bomb dropping yeah. on all of us.
Do you think John Waters could make his old movies?
No.
Like Pink Flamingos or anything like
no.
that?
No. I mean, maybe he could. I mean, they're more relevant now than ever. Anything
yeah.
he ever did is so relevant
yeah,
right
Female
now.
Trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, Female Trouble, Desperate Living. They were all...
We showed them to our kids.
Desperate Living, I saw when I was 9 years old.
We yeah. made our.
He's done my show. He's the same person.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, he smokes like what 5 packs of Cools
yeah.
a day.
Yeah.
Isn't that incredible?
I used to smoke that much.
Yeah,
and when we hung out, it was just you need a gas mask. But I love him. I hope he'll do something really offensive to shake people
Who would have thought that Hairspray would be the thing that probably made him incredibly rich?
Right?
Like a musical, you know, I guess that was what it was. A movie and then a musical.
Mm-hmm. About Hairspray.
Right, yeah.
But it was cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he'd be remembered for cute content.
Exactly. If they only knew. They only knew.
That must torture him somehow. Yeah. It really must. He's so funny, though. He's a great. I love all his. That's my dream, and I did talk to him about it way back. About my dream is to be the girl, not the, whatever. I want to make a movie like that.
Yeah.
About my childhood. I just want to make a movie, and I was just talking to people that have made movies about.
You should make a movie about your life, right?
Yeah.
You know,
nobody would believe it.
Yeah, but it's I mean, come on. I mean, it's like it's so many twists and turns. Yeah, and it's like you know what drove me crazy was that show, The Marvelous Ms. Maisel.
Oh yeah, she was a writer of mine.
Yeah. Oh, the girl that made it.
Yeah.
Oh,
that
then
wrote
I
it.
Then I won't. I was going to say that the comic wasn't funny to me.
Oh. I don't even know. I was like, well, Amy was a good writer, but
yeah, they probably, you know what? It's that weird
thing.
Well,
you know how they do. It's the serious thing. They're like, I mean, this is how I think. Well, because they don't have the people, they don't have any sense of humor. They don't like comedy. They mm-hmm. hate humor mm-hmm. even more than they hate comedy and they hate witty. They hate funny that's intelligent. They really despise that because they don't get it. But they don't get anything above a base joke anyway. So they're probably like, I don't laugh, so it's their fault.
Yeah.
So you can't have them. And anyway, we want somebody that looks like a model.
Yeah. Have you lost any comedian friends from the old days who won't talk to you or anything?
I mean, oh, yeah. All the women.
Yeah, of course.
Of course, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Some, not some, but yeah, I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they painted, I mean, this is something I'm in the middle of now looking at, how they weave a whole spell around people. Mm-hmm. They get a target and then they weave a whole, but you know, all, do something with it. Everybody's talking to me about doing something, and I don't know if I want to, but maybe I will. But
yeah.
You know, who knows? I'm old now, so I don't know.
You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Well, I kind of want to do this. I kind of wrote this sitcom for myself, you mm-hmm. know, and I was visiting an idol of mine yesterday, which was the first time I had met her. Anyway, so we were.
Can you say who it was?
Well, it was Elaine May.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Oh, my God. It was awesome. They say she never invites anybody, and she invited me.
How old is she?
Well,
I think 91.
Well, yeah. We're not. As I asked her, she said she's not at liberty to say it. But she invented a whole genre of
yeah.
comedy, which I thanked her on behalf of all my friend comic. Going, God, she introduced, you know, that whole improv.
Yeah.
She and Mike Nicholson, you know, how that just changed generations forever. And she's still so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so I was watching her movies and all like that. And she said, just get a guy with a camera. And then we were talking about, well, when you're funny and you can see funny and you can write funny, you don't really need more than a guy with a camera. Because you start thinking, oh, I need the staff and the producer.
That's where it goes bad.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to talk to you about, is the funny that you're doing. Now, I know that we were doing our research on you, and we knew that you were at Berkeley, and that's when you started to. I mean, there's two streams that I want to talk to you about. One is waking up from being at Berkeley.
Yeah.
And realizing that you're at Berkeley. Mm. And two, then becoming like who you are now, because you were in, you went to men's editing.
Yeah,
men's magazines.
I was a romantic liberal because it got you a lot of attention and extra credit. I remember when I was in high school, if we got signatures for the nuclear freeze in California, we could get extra credit. That's what I did at my high school. And then I wanted to go to Berkeley. And of course, when I got there, my romantic view of liberalism was faced with the reality of it. And I saw them up close, and I go, my God, these people are crazy. I mean, they were crazy. And also I started meeting people that weren't like, that actually read. And I realized I wasn't reading a lot. And I started reading National Review and this other magazine called American Spectator, which I ended up working for like a year. And I just started to kind of educate myself on a world that I didn't know existed. I just thought liberalism was all there is. Even with Ronald Reagan, I just thought he was a president. I didn't understand what my parents probably voted for him, but they were Democrats. But I didn't really know that there was much difference. Not that there is anymore, really, except for Trump. But I mean, it's like there was, I didn't think much about it. I remember when Reagan won in 1984, a guy came back. I was living in a fraternity and he was screaming with joy. And I was like, what's the big deal? I didn't even understand it. And it wasn't until later that it started to put it together. And I started to think for myself and I started reading. And then I started to realize that the reason why I held liberal beliefs was because they were easy and they made me look smarter than I was. Mm. And the false compassion of it all, like to pretend that you care.
Yeah.
And I realized this with liberal compassion is that it's the opposite, because it never factors in the consequences for the other people.
No.
So like you can say you're compassionate about trans athletes, but you're actually not compassionate to the other athletes,
right?
But you don't address that. And if you look at immigration, I am compassionate about those claiming asylum to come across, but you're not actually compassionate to all the people where their jobs are being displaced or the people that waited in line, did all the right things. So you ignore they don't understand the consequences of their so-called compassion. Crime. I'm for like criminal justice reform.
No bail.
Blah, blah, blah. And then when they hear that the recidivist has then committed 8 more crimes and beat up women, you don't look at that. You don't look at that. So I started to learn that there was a whole other side to my beliefs that I hadn't looked at. That changed me. In terms of magazines.
That would be like, that's a kind of an awakening and an expansion of a moral view, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. And I didn't, it was, and I didn't have that before. And I swung from like one end to the other. And then I started becoming a crazy little right winger. I went to an animal rights concert where the B-52s were playing, and I was handing out like stickers that said "Nuke the Whales," just really. And, oh, there was a one that said how they have like "I Heart Baby Seals." It was the club from I Club Baby, and I was handing these out. That's how. So I kind of probably went a little too far, but that was in D.C. when I was an intern, and then I ended up writing, trying to learn to write. Trying to learn to write for magazines and stuff. I ended up as the fitness editor of Prevention magazine. I don't know if you remember Prevention.
I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I hopped over to Men's Health, became the editor. I was fired from there after doing a piece called The Best Colleges for Men. This is like 2000. And we were seeing how things were changing against kids, boys.
Yeah.
And so
that's about the year where people started talking about it too.
Yeah. And so I said that I think the worst college for men, I can't remember what it was, but it turned out to be the CEO's alma mater. I was done. And then I went to Stuff Magazine, was the editor there, moved to Maxim in the UK. And then I ended up kind of coming back and ended up as working at Red Eye. In between there, I was doing a lot of other weird things. But Red Eye was my first TV show. Didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Had no idea. Fox basically said, I showed up there and they said, we're going to do a show. And I thought, I figured like 3 months. And they go, yeah, so you're going to rehearse for a couple of days and then we're going to go live on Monday. I was shitting myself. I was drinking during the rehearsals, drinking before the show, drinking after the show. Me and the other panelists would go to this bar and we'd be like, well, what are we doing? And then within 5 months, it became something like fun. It was like all of a sudden we figured it out. You're not supposed to care.
Right.
You're not supposed to care. Why do you care? Who cares if you screw up? That's part of the show. And then all of a sudden it became such a weird cult phenomenon. And we started getting numbers. You know, we were beating Morning Joe. I remember that. Like at 3 a.m, we were beating Morning Joe at MSNBC, which is on at like 9.
Yeah.
And we started just getting.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's college kids, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also like Insomniacs, truck drivers.
Right.
You know, it was, I remember like we had our core audience was like breastfeeders. chest feeders.
Oh, yeah.
But, say that in the demographic.
Yeah, But it was, and then he started the 5, and it was like Ailes was like, put this guy in there, maybe see what happens. And, you know, it was, you know, it just fucking took off. That thing was like crazy.
Yeah, that
and
it's was
like,
crazy.
Yeah. And then I got my show on the weekends and then that became nightly. And I did, you know, it's funny. I've got to talk about this because I did not want to do the nightly show because I was already doing the 5 and the weekly show. I didn't want a target on my back. This is like 2017. Well, hey, 20, no, I, maybe it's like 2020. And I was like, I didn't want the I was making decent money. Mm-hmm. I had enough work to do.
You mean to go into late night?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I was just going to do my show.
You thought it was going to be like a Joan Rivers. Yeah. Remember how they tried to kill her late night?
Yeah. But also everybody was it was cancel culture. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling the boss, I go like, I don't think, you know, I'm going to think about it. And I talked to one late night host, Dennis Miller, and he said, Greg, you got a good thing going. Don't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he convinced me, don't do it. And then I called Tucker and I go, yeah, Tucker. And I'd already made up my mind I wasn't doing it. I'm not doing the show. And so, but something made me think I should just call Tucker. And I go, hey, Tucker. I go, so Fox offered me this nightly thing. And he goes, you got to do it. What are you thinking? You have to do it. You got, wait. And I go, but I think, and he goes, no. You have to do, this is great. And I'm like, I had already made up my mind. I'm supposed to tell them on Monday. That was on a Friday. And he completely turned me around. And he was like, why are you even hesitating? And I was trying to explain to him. And he goes, who cares? It's like, who cares? Just do it. And then I just go, my God, he's right. And it just like, it was like, I needed somebody to just kick me in the face.
Yeah.
And cause he like, he has that energy. He has, you know, he's fearless.
Yeah,
and it's like,
is.
I just, sometimes you need somebody to kind of like transfuse their fearlessness into you.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And then I was like, you know what? If people come after me, people come after me. And then like, and then we went out balls, you know, to the wall, rude, unapologetic. And there was nothing people could do about it.
Right.
You know, when you do that, when you say, fuck them, you just like, you know.
Well, it gets funny. So that's what I was going to ask you about. But you never did stand up or any of that kind of stuff.
No.
So it doesn't make sense to me how you went from just a regular and then get funny without stand up.
I think it was from, I've been asked this from editorial meetings and magazines when we would meet and to discuss ideas. So you'd have like 6 or 7 people there. I would run these meetings and it'd be like, what do you think, Steve? And we're talking about something. And we would just go, we'd spend hours doing this to do a monthly magazine. And then it'd be cover lines coming up with cover. I think a lot of it came from those meetings because I you know, I do stand up now on these shows, but I like, I, you know, it just, you know, I never thought I loved stand up comedians. I mean, I could, I was like, that's all I watched on the Tonight Show. You know, I was a Tonight Show freak, a Letterman freak, all of that. But I just never thought I could, you know, I that would be my thing. I was a writer. I was somebody that like writes funny stuff, or I'm going to write a novel. And then this just kind of happened. I just kept moving toward it, and then it just turned into this thing, you know.
But are you so like, you must be so gratified?
Oh, I am.
It's just, it's so, first of all, it's unheard of. It's amazing. It's a huge victory against everything that we all hate.
Yes, I have to stop and think about, it's not just a show. It's a show that so many people wanted to stop.
Yeah.
So it's more than success in a way. It's a victory. And also I forget that I talked about this, like we talked about this with Breitbart when he was alive, about like, you know, there needs to be this thing.
Yeah.
There needs to be this thing. I didn't know that it was going to be me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, Red Eye, we tried to do that, but we assumed that like we're on at 3 a.m. when nobody watches. This is like a ghetto. No, you know, but it was actually, Ailes was really smart. He put me in a place to fail where I could fail every night. And then over time, I got comfortable. And it's like, it was like, yeah, I was doing open mic nights. I developed.
That's so unheard of on television. Yeah. It's unheard of.
So I did like, I don't know how many shows, I just like 7 years, maybe I think I was at doing Red Eye. And then the five overlap. And it was like, I got the best training, and now I can talk and I can think on my feet. I still write a lot of notes, but that's because I have like, I have to have some kind of substance about the topic, but it's like, sometimes I rely on it too much, but it's like, I think it happened at the pace that it was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get there too soon. I didn't get there too late.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been great. And also, I have great, I mean, Kyrus is amazing. Pat's amazing.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah. I mean,
it's an amazing forum for any comic that goes on there.
There's such different people. You got Kat, who's this like sly, you know, obviously libertarian, but just also just kind of adorable.
I like how witty she is because we don't get to see witty women on TV ever anymore. No,
she's hysterical. And of course, Kyrus is like, he's like a sage, you know? Yeah. It's like, you know, people don't, you know, if they just looked at him, they'd assume he's a wrestler, but the dude just drops a lot of wisdom.
Well, Ma, they're back at it again. As you know, the U.S. government and China
are trying to kill us some more.
Trying to kill us some more. Yeah, apparently they're doing more gain of function research, this time with the bird flu. They want to make it more deadly and more infectious.
Well, of course they do.
They're trying to kill us. We've been through COVID. We've been through it all. But we do sell a product, TWC, these medical health kits and all the emergency medical kits, sorry. And, you know, I think this is the best thing you can do to get ahead of it. So now that there's now bird flu coming back, why don't you tell the people a little bit more?
Well, the wellness company's prescription medical emergency kit is the best thing you can do or get. It contains 8 life-saving medications, including ivermectin, amoxicillin, and a Z-Pak. Plus, it comes with a guidebook to tell you exactly how you can use them, and you won't find anything like that in a store or a pharmacy. Every American should have one of these kits in their home. And ordering your kit takes less than 2 minutes, and it could not be simpler. Go to twc.help/RB and use the code RB to purchase your kit with $30 off and free shipping. For the cost of a single doctor's visit, all 8 prescription medications will be shipped to your door. Whether it's bird flu, monkeypox, cyber attacks, or drugstore shortages, you'll have what you need no matter what. Safeguard your health today by going to twc.help/RB and use RB at the checkout. Kits are only available in the USA.
Well, Mom, Field of Greens has got us energy through all the work and traveling, but now we're sick at home, still working, and I got to attribute a lot of this to this product. It's been keeping us alive.
Yeah.
It's good
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, we came home to sick kids and they gave it to us.
But we're still here working.
It is helping keeping us alive for real. I promise you're going to love this product. And if you don't, you're going to get a 100% money back guarantee if you don't like it, which I know you will like it. But I also got you 15% off your first order plus free rush shipping. So visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code RB. That's promo code RB at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. I'm wearing a matching shirt.
I love it. And just, you know, Field of Greens is radically different than a lot of these other products that are like this because the fruits and vegetables chosen in this are medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. So it's not just an amalgamation of fruits that taste good. It's stuff that's really good for you. So it's six whole fruits and vegetables pulverized. You do a scoop a day and you'll feel and look as good as we do right now.
Well, or even better, and you'll sound better too.
And it's like, hey, wow, I didn't think of that.
He's on the spot, funny too.
Oh, yeah.
He just shows up with it.
Yeah, exactly. Another person that was like, probably didn't intend to be doing this. You know? You know, it's right? Crazy.
I did talk to him about stand-up, though. He said he had done it.
Yeah, he's doing it. I mean, he's now doing these live shows, but he does it his way, you know. And he writes his jokes. It's like, it's pretty ballsy, too. But then again, professional wrestlers are performers.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be smart. Yeah. You have to be really smart to actually hold a story in your head, you know, time it so it develops, and then also like be physical.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that.
I don't know. I think they have to rehearse a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, all those guys are smart. I mean, The Rock is smart. Trying to think of others. I'm walking into a dead end.
I'm a huge Hulk wrestling Hogan. Fan.
Yeah. There you go. No. Yes.
They do things called
What's
calls.
What's his name with the governor?
Jesse Ventura is a genius.
Yeah.
I don't know whatever happened to it, but they do things called calls because they work together. It comes from the carnivals. So they have codes when they're on the ring. They'll throw out a word or stuff and they know what to do. It's the symbiosis. It's amazing.
Yeah, because they have a specific move that they've learned.
Yeah, no, they'll call it. They'll be like, we're going to do the 447, and then they know what to do.
Have you seen the movie Ricky Stenicki yet?
No.
It's a Farrelly movie?
Oh, shit, no, I have seen it. Fucking
John Cena.
He's so fucking funny
John
in that movie.
John Cena is now, in my book, one of the funniest male actors. And I didn't see it coming. Yeah. He's also a professional was he MMA or professional wrestler?
No, he's WWE. He's huge.
Yeah.
Cena's from.
Is that the guy that was naked on the Oscars they're talking about?
And he was really funny in a movie with, what's her name? Tina Fey. He was like some guy she was having sex with, and he was hilarious. I can't remember the movie. No, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one.
I didn't.
Me either.
Yeah. But they have talent, you know?
Absolutely. I love wrestling.
I want to ask you about your writing process because I'm nosy on that one.
Yeah.
What do? You're really regimented and you do the same thing every day?
Yes.
Does it just come through?
Yep.
You don't just like sit there like me and go, I have to clean the house first and then I'll get an idea?
I do that with books. But with the show, I get up every morning, have two cups of coffee, and write. And also, the phones help now because if you have an idea, you hit the thing It's like if I come with an idea, I have something to put it down on before. I don't know how many ideas I lost because of that. Remember when you would lie in bed at night, you'd think you'd have the greatest idea ever.
And
then
you didn't write it down. It's gone. Forever.
Now I got it. I used to write on the stair climber at Equinox. I'd have a clipboard and I would just write like this, and it would to pass the time, and I would write all my monologues like that. Now I get up in the morning, I write all this stuff, I put it together, I'll send an idea off to somebody who'll put a body together. Now I have help on my monologues to write like the basics, and then I just edit for hours on end and write jokes, and Joe Mackey and Joe DeVito, they write the jokes. This other guy, Dan, writes stuff, and we have the tiniest staff, and then
you just get up and it flows.
Yeah.
It just flows.
Because I was
because you've got the muscle working.
Well, yeah, I've been doing that every day as a magazine writer. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the, by the way, being a magazine writer is pretty lazy. What do you do? Write two articles a month. But back then I'd get up every morning and I'd write little bits for prevention, these little health front, they were called health fronts, 121 words, or and I would have to write, you know, blah, 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 and call a doctor. Sometimes I have to call two doctors, interview them, transcribe. Also transcribing help because I could listen and then write it. And now I write every, like now when I just listen to anybody, I will write stuff. You'll see me on the five, I'm scribbling away. And
always doing that.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's something that like there, somebody said that if when you're writing or when you're thinking a thought, writing it down, the more muscles that you use, the more likely you will like form it, create it. And so I always write it down, even if it's stupid. Sometimes I won't have an idea at all and I'll just start writing and it'll just somehow come out. Isn't that weird?
You know, that happens with me too.
Yeah, it's just freaky.
And sometimes it'll be like you're there for a really long time and then it just changes.
Just changes.
It's something that you can't describe, but
editing
does feel
is fun.
Good when it comes out and you know it's going to work, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's great when you have like, let's say this much writing. And then somehow you edit it and something happens and you just lose half of it. And it's like, bam, it's
you
like
find
this,
the core.
Yeah, the core.
The right core.
The core.
It,
and it's just like, fuck. It's like, bam. It's like this thing. And no one else has done it. Like no one else has found, like you can come up with a thought no one else came up with. And there's 7 billion people. And you're like, it's like, that to me is such, that is like a real buzz. And I get so hyped on it. And then I get into a groove. And then when I get to work, I'll edit nonstop because editing to me is now more fun. Like, how do you get something smaller? How
I
do you get it? Yeah,
too.
It's so much. Uh-huh. It's like, it's got to be it's sculpting.
Concise.
It is
sculpting. Yeah. And it's got, it's still, even if it's just a joke, it still has to have a beginning, middle, and punch.
Exactly.
And it's got to go in a loop and then go left instead of right.
Yeah.
It's fun.
The worst thing is when I have a great joke and I fuck up the delivery.
I know.
And I'm like, and I'm, when I do the show, I don't stop down and do it over again because I just go, no, I just have to live with it. And, you know, that's it. And maybe people won't notice. Most people don't, but I did. And I feel like a word, I fucked up a word. That will drive me crazy.
Yeah, you have to bring it back in a couple nights.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it again. We used to say, me and Lori Metcalf would say, when we do that, we go, Christ, fucked up a line because there's such gold, but we'd say it's kind of like a bunch of crap just dribbles out of your mouth onto your thing and you're just staring at it. Then you're going like, should I make a funny face?
Yeah, again.
But then you're like, no, I'm just gonna have to sit here with this all. Yeah, I mean,
yes.
it's horrible, especially when it's like falling over a word because the timing matters so much.
Mm-hmm. And it's,
do you always know it's gonna work?
I get mad. I get like, I will scold the audience if it doesn't work. Yeah. There was a great joke. So there was a trans male athlete. This is was a news story who was showering and dressing with the girls, and a girl was there, and he was caught staring at her breasts. This was a news story, and the joke, I'm trying to remember it. The joke goes, in his defense, he said that he was staring at her breasts so he would lose his boner. nobody, it was like, it kind of just went, it just laid there. And it's like, I was like, oh, you, and I'm yelling at the audience. And I think it's on the show. I'm going, you guys, that was the best joke. And it was a joke. Like, it was a joke that was like, workshop between me and I think it was Joe Mackey, and I don't even remember how it just like, and then it was like, to lose the boner was like, that is just brilliant.
It is. It takes a good snake that, laugh.
Yes.
I like that. I tried this for years and it never did work. Mm. I shouldn't have said it that way. I shouldn't have said that first. But I thought that this was so funny, and it never did work. But well, now I said. But it just cracks me up still. I'll see what you all think is funny because I already told you. But anyway, I go, you know that thing where they go, I complained because I had no shoes. You know how it
Yeah, yeah,
right?
yeah.
Okay, so mine was, I complained because I had no shoes. But then I met a woman who had no waist. I don't know why this.
I don't know the premise.
So. I don't. Just because I was always obsessed with having no waist, I guess. I don't know. It's just crazy.
I thought it was good. That's in like Stephen Wright territory.
Yeah. Oh my God. Where is he?
I think I saw him on something. He might even have a special.
He needs to come back.
Yeah. He was amazing.
He was fiercely crazy.
Dude. Oh God. He was great. He wrote like the perfect just jokes. Also, though, the best was Norm MacDonald.
Oh, Norm. So nobody's ever going to be that funny again.
No. And he was one of us. He was not a liberal. And it was, I'll never forget when he complimented me on Twitter, and I thought I was going to pass out. I went to see him at the Paramount Theater in New York, and I'm getting on a train with my buddy, and he's on the same train. He goes, come over here. And we just sat and we hung out the entire night. I went backstage with him and just sat in the green room. And then we hung out the night after. And then we took the train back together, and he got yelled at by the conductor and other people because he was so loud because he gambles on his phone.
Right.
And he was like watching these games and just like intense screaming. Yeah. And like people are like complaining, and they told him to shut up.
God, I miss him. He had the best. I still watch everything I can of him.
His podcast.
There was nobody. I know.
Oh my God. Some of them were so dry and brutal.
He was on SNL and doing the news, though.
Oh, the Hillary Clinton stuff.
There was nothing, and they hated it so bad.
Yeah, he got fired for OJ jokes and Hillary jokes.
Those jokes.
Yes. When he did The View, and they did not know.
The View.
Yeah, they didn't know what to do with him.
That's the best. When he's like, I thought everyone knew that she murdered that guy.
Yeah.
That's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
Poor
Vince
Norm.
Foster.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to murder in the White House.
He was very honest.
He was great to you,
everything.
Too.
He was after a great friend.
Yeah, he was
I had no idea he was sick.
He didn't tell anybody.
I guess he told a few.
Yeah. No, it was like, I remember.
I was mad at him because I left a message. Norm. Because I was calling him going, is this funny? I do those calls to my friends, and then they don't take my calls anymore after a certain number. They get tired of me. But I thought he had gone into that friend zone or whatever it is where they won't listen to your jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, Norm, you're not going to turn into the guy that doesn't call me back because I bother you too much, are you? And then he was dead.
Yeah,
I didn't even know he was sick.
No.
I was like, that son of a bitch doesn't even call me back.
I guess he just like, he was a really private person, didn't want anybody to know.
Yes.
He didn't look great when on that trip, but I just thought maybe I've never seen him before. So I just thought, oh, he just looks this way, but he didn't look healthy. But I didn't have a clue, and it was that he's the only person who, when they died, I had to text so many people because we were all like, something was stolen.
That's
like
how
it was stolen. Yeah, something was stolen from you, and it's not fair. You know, it's like somebody.
Because it was so unexpected.
Yeah,
and he was just he had the best Trump joke ever. He goes, he said, I hope I do it right. He goes, people hated Hillary so bad. Did you hear this joke?
I think so, but
people hated Hillary so bad that they voted for a guy they hated even worse just to piss her off.
100% true. It's 100% true.
So true.
What do you think's the big thing that you should tackle next? Because I mean, if I was sitting up here and I was King of the Hill late night, and I knew that everything sucked and that it's just getting worse and I have to do something to help my country and the people
this
in
lawfare
it.
Stuff,
oh, yeah, exactly.
This lawfare, it's like, it is incredible. I'm actually more angry at the media because the media is supposed to be like, you should be going after these alphabet institutions, CIA, right. FBI.
The lies.
The lies. It's like, what happened to All the President's Men and all of those movies of the 70s where the journalists were fearless? And now it's actually happening and they're part of it.
Yeah.
They're part of it. It's like, wait, you do realize that they're trying to put him in jail to win an election. And then they're even Biden-Harris camp posted on X, like they were boasting about how much money they raised and how much money he has to pay for lawyers. Mm-hmm. They're not even hiding what they're doing. You know?
And they like it.
They like
and
it.
Going on X, and I about tear what's left of my horrible hairdo out. I had a drive-by hair accident. It was tragic. But I go on there, and I just, it makes me get like an ulcer because they're proud of how they are destroying our country, yeah. our laws. They're proud that they're involved in corrupt law against yeah. people.
Yeah.
That they're ruining people's lives for no fucking reason. They love it.
Yeah. And hush money, I'm pretty sure, is not illegal. Like paying somebody not to say something. I don't think that's against the law. Mm. And I don't think anybody ever wrote, like, this is for hush money on anything.
No.
So it's been done over and over again. But no, I don't think there's a law. Like, you're under arrest for paying this person
that's
not to-
That's a good point. I don't
not to
think
tell,
so either.
Like, hey, don't tell my wife I slept with this Eskimo. Yeah. That's here's that $1,000. That's not against the law.
No,
that's not against the law.
That's
so it's it to me, and I know they're gonna well, they use campaign funds or maybe yeah. use that's still not against the law.
Against
it's
the law.
But it is and also like
but look what they excuse.
Yes, I was gonna say like you look at okay January 6th they went too far, but compare that to how the people that aren't in jail.
Right.
After the riots and the looting and what we're seeing in New York City, like there are grandmothers in jail because they prayed it in the Capitol. And there are people that are 9, 10, 12 times arrested, let out, beaten up chicks. And, you know, it's like they're it's so clear that they are targeting. They're hunting people. They're hunting. If you're a Republican, if you're not a liberal, you're being hunted, whether you're in the media or entertainment or you're just somebody in a fucking trailer park. CNN would say
they hate Trump voters.
Yes.
But now I think they're going to go all in on the RFK voters too.
Yes, absolutely.
They're
going to
do both of it. You know, it's like, well, we're bringing in these people to replace you. We're going to put you all in camps.
Yeah.
We're bringing these people because they'll vote for us because we have to stay because we're not going to jail.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we hate Americans. We hate Americans. None of them are going to vote for us anymore.
Yeah.
So we have to let all the criminals and bring in crazy people from other countries.
I saw, we did this on the 5. We showed Biden speaking to Univision, and it was about what he was saying, but I couldn't help. He looked dead. I mean, this is the worst he's ever looked. So I'm thinking, okay, so he's sitting there. He's doing this big interview. He must have some makeup on. He looked like he's, what, 81 or 80? Something like that. He looks like a bad 80.
Yeah,
like
he does.
Like it's not good.
No,
it's not good. And he was like, and I'm going, okay. Even if I love this guy, let's say I was pro Biden, I would be like, you can't do this.
Yeah,
you can't do this.
Someone needs to let him sleep.
Yeah, you got to stop this. This is bad for him. Bad for the country. Even if I believed in him, which I don't. Everything he's doing is on the orders of somebody else. Right. I came up with this line on the 5 yesterday where I said, just because they say they're against it doesn't mean they're behind it. You know,
that's so true.
Yeah, like crime, immigration. Nobody is going to say they're for squatting, but they're behind it.
Yeah.
They're not going to say, I'm not for an open border, but you're behind it. Right. And it's to keep us occupied so we can't do anything else. We got to hate each other. We got to be in this mental chaos so we can't do anything. By the way, lawfare is that way. Keep this guy occupied.
Right.
Keep him busy.
Oh, I'll break him down.
Yeah.
Make him put all their money toward their defense.
Yep.
And they have to be in the talking to lawyers 9 hours every single day.
Yeah.
Right now, there's a silent epidemic that's hurting hundreds of millions of Americans that nobody talks about, and that is fatty liver. Just want to reiterate that fatty liver affects your sleep. It affects your life. It gets
I probably have a fatty liver. I probably do.
I think your liver needs to have its stomach stapled. So why don't you take a swig of that alcohol while we talk about fatty liver?
Oh, I shall.
I think you're the best spokesman for this liver health product.
Well, you know, it's very important to start protecting your liver today.
Yes.
You can do so with Liver Health Formula. It's an all-natural supplement which contains 11 clinically proven botanicals to help recharge and protect your liver. This company already helped more than 2 million fellow Americans with their products, and it's not surprising that Liver Health Formula is so popular. You can try Liver Health Formula and receive a free bottle of nano-powered omega-3 to keep your heart healthy. Try Liver Health Formula by going to getliverhelp.com/RB and claim your free bonus gift. Remember, your liver is responsible for 500 key functions, so it's time to give it a boost in performance. Go to getliverhelp.com/RB.
All right, Ma, you getting ready to hit your Diet Smoke gummies?
These are so good. They sent me their new favorite flavor, 420 Reserve Indica, which is good. Indica, I always mix them up because there's two kinds. There's sativa and indica.
Right.
And I can never remember which it is, but somebody told me to go indica is in the couch.
In the couch, that's the truth.
Or you need to relax. I think this is my favorite, and it's watermelon flavored. Oh, and perfect. I have been feeling badly because we got the flu, right, Jake?
Yeah,
just we came home from our travels.
Yeah.
So as soon as I'm done with doing these ads, I'm eating my watermelon 420 Indica. Dang, I'm going to go off on a lovely little nap.
Well, this is your last ad, so you better nail this before it kicks in. So I just want to say, Diet Smoke, they've been supporting us since the beginning. What I love about them, there's a lot of weed companies out there, but what Diet Smoke does specifically is they have a sommelier that tailors.
A sommelier, just like they got over there at Starbucks or a winery.
Not
right?
Starbucks.
They help you with your buzz. Here's the good part, though. Exclusively for the Roseanne Barr Show listeners, Diet Smoke has this special 420 offer. Go to dietsmoke.com and use code RB420 at the checkout, and you will receive 4 free gifts and 20% off your entire order.
Wow.
You see what I did there?
Yeah.
See what I did there? You'll see what they did there. I'll repeat, use code RB420 at the checkout, and you'll receive 4 free gifts and 20% off your entire order. See, 4 plus 20, 420, you know, 420.
Good. It's kicking in, I can tell. Diet Smoke has sold over 10 million gummies. Did you know that? And I think we're responsible for at least 8 million of those. So I'm happy to be...
That I ate myself, you mean?
Yeah. No, I was going to say you pushed the product. And people that listen to this show, they love to hit the Diet Smoke gummies and then listen to you and I just blabber for an hour. It's the best. I see it in the comments all the time. So Diet Smoke.
Well, get on the Indica if you need a nap or you're not filling up and you need, like, you know, to rest so you can, you know, your body can heal. Use the sativa for when you're on the go and you want to, like, write or, you know, get on X and tell everybody to kiss your ass. You know what I mean?
Well said. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that I sometimes wonder if that helps Trump because it takes up the time that he would have spent, you know, saying shit he couldn't. Like, it's like, you know what? It's like maybe this is like a hobby. It's like, you know, he only has a few hours to be Trump.
Right.
So maybe this might, like,
that's a good point,
localize a lot of the Trump impact. And the less you see of him, the more people on the fence like him.
Yeah.
Because they see Biden. And they're going like, who is this guy? This is not our president.
Well, I think that Trump's doing that to them, keeping them busy.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's true, too.
And they are, like, slowly untangling and unmasking themselves, because what I love the best is, and it just came up if you really looked at it hard, was that they all used RICO to accuse him of RICO.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the White House, talking to Kamala,
yes.
Bonnie Wilson. That's RICO. The whole thing, all the judges, all complete RICO to make up a charge of RICO. And it's, of course, going to bite them in the ass.
Yeah, it is amazing that, like, even something as simple as, you know, everybody knows Joe Biden was the big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep
the press. And then they say he's too old. They're not going to do – he's too old to be
– Yes.
To be punished. Yeah. He's going to run for president. Yeah.
Yeah. That means I'm going to wait till I'm his age and kill people.
Yeah.
You know, if that's the rule,
that's
you
the
know.
Time to do it.
But the horror of it is that there's just no laws of our entire republic are being respected. They're doing whatever the hell they want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lawfare is that. It's just pure Marxism. Yeah, it's making a joke of everything.
You know, the thing is, I've come around, like, when I didn't really see the Marxism underneath all this, but now it is so obvious that it's like, this is how Marxism morphs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It didn't work in the class, in class warfare. So they turned it into race and identity warfare.
That's how they
did it. And it just keeps morphing, and it's all the same. It's the same people.
It's all the same people.
It's the same
and
people.
And then they use the blackmail to get their way in. Cause I just heard a guy say that's how Kamala got vice, because she got all the black celebrities to get a hold of Biden and say, you need a black woman to be vice president.
Well, they needed to counter the fact that he was
a racist.
Racist. Yes. I mean, things he said on tape, you know?
Remember all she said?
Oh, I was that little girl on the bus.
Not.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
No, you weren't.
No.
You were that woman on her knees. Oh, my God. It's disgusting. Do you think that I worked as hard as I did to, mm-hmm. me and tons of women, mm-hmm. to see that become vice president, a woman who blew her way to the middle? Are you shitting me?
I'm feeling like Tucker when it goes like this. He does. You know, I realize Tucker does the laugh when he doesn't want to comment.
Yeah. I know. He does. It's a cringe laugh. Yeah. I saw him.
It's a great. I remember, like, the one thing that pissed me off too. I love Theo Von.
I love that fucking
interview where they tried to string you and him up was insane. They didn't get what you were talking about.
No.
And I could tell that he wasn't used to that being in that situation afterward. And it was just such garbage.
He was really upset.
Aren't you? I should do. No, I'm not going to talk about it. I was going to bring up Geraldo.
I was going to.
That's what I'm
I've been
for.
Building for
no,
this.
No, that's what we I said we were going to do Geraldo. At the end. How much time? Because we have him for
10 more minutes. No,
I said at the end we got time for Aldo.
I'll talk. Now there's some things like I probably can't talk about, but ask me. Yeah, I don't give a shit. Look, the guy did some nasty stuff to me that I can't talk about.
No,
but he
you
did
don't have
he
to.
Because it'll just kick up stuff. But
let's talk about how crazy the guy is and how crazy he was at the end when he was on Fox, when he was like just talking out of his ass every day. That
my
made
favorite
no
was
sense.
The EV Bentley. Do you remember, he was talking about climate change and if you wanted an example of how elitists, snobs treat the rest of us, uh-huh. and how they use climate change as a weapon against us.
Yeah.
He goes, you know, we have to understand that, you know, our planet is in trouble. I mean, and I tried to get an EV Bentley, but it wasn't out yet. So I had to get the regular Bentley, and I've lost it. I started screaming on the show, EV Bentley. Oh, you EV Bentley. And that was just like, I had it. I was like, I can't. And it was so, by the way, that was good television because it was so comical.
Yeah.
It was like, he actually said that. Yeah. He wasn't joking.
No.
Yeah, he's
He's out there as pure Democrat all the way.
Yeah, yeah. But
and
he does
he
the
would
thing.
Still-
he does that thing where, like, you know, I love President Trump like a brother, but and then he stabs him.
Yeah.
When my mom was on your show last year here, he was doing the five. We were watching, and you were saying, "Oh, Roseanne's going to be on tonight." And he's like, "Yeah, the fact that she called."
Yes.
Valerie Jarrett, a monkey. And he said on the Fox News, I remember I talked to you backstage. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Yeah.
He's lying on Fox News.
Yeah.
This is a safe space.
He just is in his box.
Who
that
is he
can't
trying
get
to
out of?
Who is blackmailing
him? He's in a vault.
Yeah.
He's empty.
With nothing in it.
There's nothing
in that vault. Just like
but you know how many of them there are.
Yeah.
Like, I think other late night hosts are in that same vault.
Oh no, they are.
Don't even. But is it a fear vault or is it just a lack of creativity?
Can I make a very sexist comment?
Of course.
A lot of them, it's because of wives.
I say so too.
Yes.
They're all witches.
Look what happened
They're
to Howard Stern.
They're lesbian witches.
Look what happened to Howard Stern.
Yeah, took his
he
balls.
Was a different person. And now he's like so
disgusting.
Timid. Look at Kimmel. He wore, you know, blackface, and now he's acting like he's like whatever. I think that like people, the men,
they're under witchcraft. Yeah. Their wives are under the sway of lesbian publicist witches. That's who runs Hollywood. Lesbian witches, and all the feminists listen to them. The married feminists. If they don't have a lesbian witch as the person who's dressing them or doing their publicity, wow, they're lost.
I'm going to take your word for it just to be safe, but I will. I have to say that, like, I notice how a lot of my friends change, and it's like they can't say that they like Trump.
Right.
No, they're scared shitless.
Yeah, they're scared.
Well, look what happened to me.
Yeah.
I dared say it.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
I really thought people in my real life when I was in Hawaii, you know, that's a pretty communist state.
Yeah.
Hawaii is pure commie. And I would say I was for Trump, and the people were like, oh, that's okay. It's okay. They didn't care. But in Hollywood, they were choking on their gizzards.
They fear for their careers. And I without the lesbian aspect of it, the world is run by publicists.
Right.
And
they're all lesbians. I don't know why you don't know that.
I don't know. Well, I haven't had a publicist in ages.
That's why you don't know.
Yeah. But I always found that they're miserable and they're essentially unhappy and lonely. And a lot of this status is driven by transferring their maternal instinct mm-hmm. to issues.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's like the joke, the cliche is like, oh, they have cats and they live alone. The cats now are the policies and the positions they take. So they're easily led into the trendiest cause because that's their new cat. That's the new cat that they feed. So they have five cats, you know, and there are all these different issues. And so that is their, I think it's a shifting of, everybody has instincts mm-hmm. and it's not even women, whether they like it or not, have a maternal instinct.
Right.
And somehow it's been hijacked. And you know,
you know what it is though, in my opinion, they're all protecting a pedophile. That's what they're doing with their maternal instincts is they're like, I'm protecting a pedophile producer that pays me.
Oh yeah, in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's the pecking order.
Yeah,
and the lesbian publicist is like, their number one thing is to point out women who oppose them.
Right, right, right. Again, not my area.
Yeah,
but no, I'm building my moat. But you know what's interesting about when you go on TikTok and you see these trans women, i.e. men in drag, they're always throwing a tantrum.
Yeah.
What affects the maternal instinct? Tantrums.
You're
That's
right.
That's true.
Wow.
So it's like, why are all of these women white knighting?
It's totally white knighting.
Yes.
It's the white savior horseshit.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like there were like, mm-hmm. I think it was Riley Gaines. Saying that when they told her that they were going to have a male on the team, they were all against it and they voted against it. And then they had the male swimmer come in and he said that if he wasn't allowed to swim, he would kill himself. And so what does that do to your maternal instinct?
Maternal instinct.
You just go, nobody wants, and without even the maternal instinct, you don't want that guilt, blood on your hands, but
they know how to manipulate women.
Emotional leverage.
They're like, you will let this penis swing in your face or someone's gonna get hurt.
Do you remember the story? There were stories about on dating apps, women, female dating apps, that if a trans woman, if you didn't date a trans woman who had a penis on a ladies app, you were transphobic.
Oh yeah.
And so it's like a lesbian who's on a women's dating app has to date a woman with a penis. And she's like, well, this is not why I came here.
Yeah. She's like, no, I'm a lesbian.
Yeah.
I don't like that. But it's like, you will like it. You will. It's like, they are throwing tantrums.
Yeah.
It is that.
Yeah. And you know what? It's because the adults have left the room. We forgot how to deal with tantrums from, and because I guess we weren't used to adults throwing tantrums,
right.
But a lot of this gynophilia, a lot of these guys dressing up as young girls, it's all part of this.
Like that, what's his name? The Bud Light guy.
Yeah, but Dylan Mulvaney loved
he
to dress.
He dressed up like an 8-year-old
like
girl.
A candy
nobody,
striper.
And nobody's saying anything about what him doing a little girl.
Yeah, yeah. I have,
what a world.
I know. Well, should we end on that?
Yes, we should.
It's,
well, we got Geraldo, we got lesbians, we got trans. I think we did it all, right?
And I'm going to see you tomorrow.
Yeah, we have 3 minutes, so wrap it up. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to sign. Let me sign that.
Fine, before you run.
Greg, absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming. It was wonderful. I know, I'm trying to get my outfit, and my hair is horrible, so I have to do something.
They can do your they can do your hair. Everyone does it. They can do your hair and makeup there, too. I have to ask you that. Do you want to do it there, or you want to go in like 90% and get touched?
I spelled you wrong. That's how nervous I am.
That's all right, baby.
This is hilarious. Look at this. Look at this. This is like I'm mentally ill.
I love it.
Look at that. That I,
what I do.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Tucker Carlson in the praise.
We
cool.
Love Tucker.
I got, now I have something to read tonight.
I know.
That'll be good.
You do a great Tucker, by the way. I'm sure you've heard that
it
before.
It is a good one.
But it's easy. He's got that laugh.
Yeah. I love Tucker. All right. Well, thank you so much. I know you have to
thank
go.
Thank you. Oh, you see.